Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, we're checking in with one of the most popular franchises, and definitely one of the most interesting horror franchises currently going.
I don't know if I call it interesting.
I find it more interesting than you do, but that's a conversation we're going to have a little later in the show.
I guess so.
I can't say this for sure, but I predict you are going to once again chide me for being too optimistic, because that's been happening a lot lately and giving people too much credit. That actually happens quite frequently.
Naively optimistic about stuff.
I am. I really am. And as I was watching the second movie this week, I'm like, huh, this could really go somewhere interesting. And I know DM's going to say I'm an idiot for thinking they're capable of that. But I guess we're going to see. Anyway, I mean, we're talking about The Purge. I think I'm going to have put that in the title. But yeah, we're talking about The Purge franchise. All right. So, but first, before we get there, just a couple of minor things. I wanted to apologize to our commenter from last week. I did not understand that the... I don't take back what I said in a fictional situation that isn't what happened. Like, had the situation I imagined been what happened, then everything I said would have been correct. But, no, I didn't realize Sabrina had used, like, actual art that they had commissioned. So, yeah, no. If Sabrina used an actual piece of art that the Church of Satan paid money for and trademarked that specific piece of art, yeah, absolutely they should sue. I mean, that's just, of course they should. I totally misunderstood what the issue was, and I'm sorry for jumping on criticism like that. In my defense, I didn't have time to research the issue at all. I found out about it from you reading a comment, but I still completely misrepresented what the right thing in that situation was. And I apologize for that, because absolutely, yeah, if they stole, for example, right, I didn't invent the character Scarecrow Dentist that I use as my Hoguru avatar, right? But in order to promote the Scarecrow Dentist brand, I commissioned a piece of art for that. And of course, the people who invented Scarecrow Dentist can use Scarecrow Dentist all they want, but if they use the art that I paid to create for Scarecrow Dentist, I would have more of a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
But that is my own life issue in this situation. That is the closest I can come to commenting. So yeah, totally the Church of Satan, while I previously on the show discussed how they annoyed me, they are 100% right about this issue.
Right. On the topic of Sabrina, I want to say a couple things. I was mistaken. It's not Unseen University. It's the Academy of Unseen Arts that she attends.
So close, and a reference, but not direct, obvious reference. Okay.
Yes. And I think I'm going to stop watching it.
Oh, no. Did you hear what they announced today?
No.
They just hired Alexis Denisoff for season 2.
Oh, really?
I don't know how he's going to play. But it's like, now I want to start watching. Alexis Denisoff is my hero. Why are you stopping?
No, he's great. But I just, like, I got partway through episode 4 or 5, I think. And then I had to shut it off for whatever reason. And I haven't gone back to it. I don't feel like I'm missing anything.
Oh, okay. Now, I mean, when a show doesn't hook you, it doesn't hook you. I'm not going to try and, you know, say, oh, but you have to watch. Alexis will be on. But, you know.
Yeah, that's all right.
I get it. Hey, if he's wonderful, I'll make a YouTube compilation of great Alexis Denisoff moments from season 2 of Sabrina, and you can just watch that. I'm confident that there will be some.
Probably won't, but okay.
I have a lot of faith in him. What? He's fantastic.
No, I'm sure he'll have great moments, and you can make a super cut till your heart's content, but I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying.
It's true. That 4 minutes of your life, you'd never get that back. So, yeah, I totally
understand.
I have
other things I can do with those 4 minutes.
Oh, no, totally. I mean, there's songs you could listen to, for example. Or, like, takeout menus you can read. Like, absolutely. There are totally way better ways to spend your time than to check out work someone put a lot of effort into.
I feel like I don't read enough takeout menus, so...
Obviously. Yeah. You just keep going to the same place over and over again. Live on the edge. Read some new menus. Maybe you get an
idea.
Hey, I mean, of course, then again, my takeout choices are entirely defined by the fact that I have a tie place in my building.
In the building. You don't actually have to go outside.
No, I don't. So, but when it's not winter, I do go to the Greek place one block away.
Across the street?
No, it is one block away. Although, there is a Chinese restaurant across the street that I never go to because I hate, you know, fried food. But that's me. All right, so that's enough about takeout. We're here to talk about a video game I want everyone to play and buy. You know, buy before you play it. I don't want you to be one of those people who, like, steals the game and plays it and then realizes they like it and then buys it. No, just go and buy it. Trust me on this one. It comes out next year. I think January or February. They haven't announced a date yet. It is called The Textorcist.
What?
It is a bullet hell exorcism game. That was a hard word for me to say for some reason. A bullet hell exorcism game that, get this, is also a typing game. So you know how you have to yell nonsense to do an exorcism?
Sure.
You have to type that on the keyboard while also using the arrow keys to dodge bullets.
Jesus.
It's amazing. And, oh, by the way, we find out in the game's prologue that the power of exorcism is so intense that if you use it on a human who isn't possessed, they will explode like a character from Fist of the North Star.
Wow.
So it's beautiful.
Okay.
It's super bloody. It's super entertaining. And, like, it is so tense and so difficult to control because, you know, you have to do these two completely different tasks simultaneously. But if you really want to go for it, what you can do is you can have one person hold like an Xbox controller and the other person sit at the keyboard and do like one person dodges, the other person types, and it works perfectly. Like, I'm blown away by what a good job they did with this game. Okay. I'm only like an hour in and it's fantastic. So yeah, it's called Textorcism. The Textorcist. And it's currently having a beta test. But I don't see any problems that are, I mean, one of my computers it didn't load on, but the other one it loaded fine. That's a minor technical issue that I'm sure is related to my, like, graphics card or whatever. They have months to work that out, but this thing is going to be fantastic. I can't imagine it's going to cost more than $15 or $20. And just for the crazy audacity of watching, like, a mugger explode because a priest yelled at him, you need this game. Like, I would watch this movie. So yeah, the Textorcist. Okay. Check it out, coming soon. Next up we have
a list.
I love those.
I know, right? So this week's list is the 20 best movies about human experiments.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So obviously number one is the Belko experiment, but what else is on the list?
Well, this list is from July 2016.
Oh, so they might not have seen Belko yet.
So, yeah.
I mean, it had been in festivals at that point, but they might not have seen it.
I will tell you right now, Belko is not on the list.
Okay, they just hadn't seen it then. Because it's like, honestly, when I heard that list, I'm like, well, they obviously made this to coincide with the release of the Belko experiment. It even has experiment in the title.
No, because I think Belko experiment was at TIFF in 2016.
Oh, you're right. It didn't come out till the, like, fall.
So that would have been September.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah. Okay, that's making me sad already, but I'm psyched to hear about the rest of the list. As
well,
long as that terrible
be.
White Room movie isn't on there, because that thing was such garbage.
All right, number 20.
I just want to remind everybody about the movie The White Room. What if we just can't scare these terrorists, you know, in Iraq enough, but if we had American suicide bombers, then they'd be scared of us?
No.
You have robots that fly 5 miles in the air and drop bombs on their houses when they least expect you to hit. They are already scared of you. Them being scared of you isn't the issue. Oh, God, I hated that movie. Please continue.
Number 20, Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS.
Wow, what a great place to start. A sleazy movie that is, you know, gets a little bit into the Joseph Mengele stuff. I wouldn't call it actually a movie about experimentation, because, like, really it's just more about human perversion. But,
well, I guess,
you know.
She was she experimenting?
Kind of. I mean, because again, it references the medical experiments that Mengele did on people, but It's mostly just about, you know, excuses to get women naked in a disturbing way.
Right.
Yeah, there's not a lot of depth to that.
I haven't seen it, obviously. I thought it was a werewolf movie, so.
Oh.
She-Wolf!
No, it's got it right. It's got the word wolf right there in the title. I get it. No, it's just a generic 70s woman in prison movie, except, you know, because it's referencing actual Nazi atrocities, it's a little more sleazy than most.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, number 19, Reanimator.
Aww. I'm great shocked movie. It's not higher on the list. That's one of
right?
The,
I feel like
it's one of my favorite experimentation movies.
It's so great. Good. I know. It should be higher on the list. It doesn't deserve to be 19.
All right. What's up?
18, The Boys from Brazil.
See, that's a really good movie.
Yeah. Great movie.
I really love that movie. And it's one of those things where it's like, weird that they never got around to remaking that one.
I'm glad that they haven't.
Oh, me too. But it's like, just kind of weird. You know, you'd think they would have.
Eh.
Or done a sequel about, you know, whatever happened to those, like, Nazi kids who were out there. Like, you could actually do a sequel about what happened to those kids who were, like, born in 1970 and are now the president of the United States. In the fiction. Right. Obviously, I'm not saying Donald Trump is a clone of Hitler. That would make no sense. Go.
Number 17, The Sylvian Experiments.
I have not seen this.
This is Hiroshi Takahashi.
Oh, okay.
And I've never heard of it.
Concern.
Follows two sisters who are daughters of two neurosurgeons. Ooh. And then I guess they do experiments on the girls.
Okay, in order to.
I don't know.
Okay, so it's not, it does not clearly explain the premise in this list entry.
No, it does. I just haven't read it, and I'm not going to do that now. So,
good, strong argument. Let's keep
Thank
going.
Thank you. Number 16, Exam, which I have exam? Seen. This is a British movie about people who are writing an exam.
Oh,
to
no,
get...
we covered it on the show. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 And, yeah. And it's like, the only way to win is not to play, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Yeah.
Not that it's not to play. It's just the answer is right in front of them the whole time. It's on the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, the answer is I don't have any questions. Do you have any questions? The answer is no. But anyway, continue. Yeah, I mean, we actually kind of enjoyed this movie. We just thought it kind of was flawed in its world building and setting up stakes and making it clear what the problem was and how these people were going to solve it. Like, intellectually, like, the situation they set up is interesting, and if it had stakes, it would have made for a really good movie, but they botched that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Number 15, Dead Ringers.
Is that about human experimentation? Like, it's a great movie, but
it's
I don't
great,
know that
no,
it's about...
No, it's not. Like, because one of them, he just goes kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and I think he probably... Nuts. I don't know, but I think he might mutilate some of his patients because he's insane and he thinks that they're... monster
women. Yeah, I think it's a situation where he wants to, and then like the other doctors kick him out of, you know, being a doctor, and then they commit double suicide, spoiler alert.
Way to ruin it for everyone.
Well, in my defense, the movie came out 30 years ago.
So maybe it's not about human experimentation as much as it's about women's descent into badness.
Yeah, I don't really think experimentation, because you're right, like, what experimentation he does with the that whole scene where he invents obstetric tools to be used on mutant women.
Yes.
Which, Jesus Christ.
And it's an art
becomes
installation.
The guy's like, oh, I get it. It's an art installation.
He's like, no.
No. Their tool. Like, how much clearer can I be about this? But anyway, yeah. It's a good scene. And it's a really good, like, it's a great movie.
It is.
But
it's a great
movie. And those tools would show up, what, 1 year later in Batman as the as the plastic surgery tools that
really?
Were used
are
on Jack
the same
Napier.
Tools?
It's the same props, yeah.
Ah, that's amazing.
As a little joke.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah, no, I mean, the fact that that we can, like, drop specific references to specific scenes of a movie I watched once 25 years ago should let you know just how amazing this movie is. It's an incredible film. And again, it's the best twin performance you're ever going to see before they had computers to do that for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really incredible, the performances in this. Like, Jeremy Irons is amazing. And they just like, well, we're not going to give you an Oscar for a horror movie. So whatever you do next year, we'll just give you an Oscar for that. And that's why he won the Oscar for Reversal of Fortune.
Right.
I don't know if that's true, but in my head, I want that to be true.
Sounds good. Let's go with it.
Sounds better than the truth, whether it's true or not. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up.
Number 14, Shutter Island. I don't remember this being about an experiment.
No, I mean, it is, because it's trying a new form of treatment, of psychological treatment. Like, they think they can cure him if they do this really ridiculous play acting thing.
Right, yes.
So, yeah, okay. Like, I think that counts as an experiment.
I remember not liking it. Like, I appreciate that it's a good movie, but I didn't really like it that much, I think, because I knew what was going on.
Yeah, if you figure out what's going on right at the start, as a lot of people did... I don't think you get much out of the movie. And I did not figure out right away the way you did. Because I remember we talked about it after I'd seen it. And you're like, did you figure it out immediately or sooner? And I'm like, this one time? No. But, you know, fast enough, but not enough that it ruined the experience. Like I think it did for a lot of people.
Yeah.
All right, next up.
Number 13, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
Not about human experimentation.
Like,
that's
seen
just
it.
Not what that movie. That's just not what that movie's about.
No,
like, the movie is about an existing process. Like, it's about someone who can have their memories of a person erased and what it's like going through that process. Like, that's like saying, they're not trying to test out the process. They're not trying to get the kinks out. Blah 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 blah. Like, they're an under the radar, unapproved medical procedure. But it's just about a guy getting a procedure. To say it's about human experimentation would suggest that the people doing the procedure, and I think that counts as the definition of experimentation. If the person doing the procedure is not doing it to learn something, it's not an experiment. Like, that's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, like, and I'm not going to say you can't learn something without setting out to. Like, every time you do open heart surgery on someone, right, you have a chance to learn a new thing about open heart surgery. That's just how experience works. But I think it's fair to say that if you are an experienced open heart surgeon just going to do open heart surgery, your goal is to get the surgery done, not to learn something. So it's not an experiment. Does that track?
Well, I guess it just depends on the setup for the film, because like I know it's on the list, so I know it's coming. And I think it just depends on the people who are performing the procedure.
Okay.
And what they're hoping to get of it. Because you can run the same test, like, a bunch of times.
Yeah, but I think what it comes down to is if the motivation of the person doing the test, doing the procedure, is to learn something or specifically to develop the procedure, not to do this thing that they do because they're being paid to do it, then no, I don't think it counts as an experiment.
Okay.
If your main goal is to just do the thing you're paid to do, it's not an experiment. But all right. Please. And you can say, oh, well, technically they say it's an experimental procedure. Yeah, that just means it hasn't been codified and been, you know, completely commoditized by the medical industry.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is splitting hairs. Please continue.
Number 12, open your eyes.
That's not about human experimentation at all.
It's not?
No, do you want me to spoil the movie?
Sure.
Okay, well, Tom Cruise gets in a car accident. Right. And he's given the opportunity to and we don't know this right away. We later find
about Vanilla Sky.
I'm thinking about Vanilla. No, isn't Open Your Eyes is Vanilla Sky. It's the same movie.
Open Your Eyes is the Spanish thriller that Vanilla Sky is based on.
Yes, but they're the same movie and it's not an experiment in either case. Like, it's just a thing a guy has done. And again, yes. The kind of, like, cryogenic thing they put him in is experimental, but it's not about human experimentation. It's about a medical procedure and what the experience of the person going through the medical procedure feels like. And again, it's very similar to Eternal Sunshine in that way, because it's about the first person inside your head experience of being part of a medical procedure. But it's not an experiment. It's not about experimenting on people. It's just not. And you're right. I did start talking about Vanilla Sky because I said Tom Cruise, but it's the same movie. Like it was a remake of Open Your Eyes with the same premise. So I apologize for saying Tom Cruise there, but my point remains valid. Okay. All right. Hit me.
Number 11, Jacob's Ladder.
No! Do these people not know what an experiment is? And the weird part is, right, they're in within the plot of Jacob's Ladder, the character thinks he's being experimented on, but mm-hmm. that's not what the film is about. So I guess this is as close as I can take to giving it to them, because he does think that it's an experiment because of stuff that happened in Nam and Agent Orange, but it's not about an experiment. Wow, this is a very sloppy list. Well, and I know that's not nothing new to us, but wow.
10 more to go.
Okay, so. I thought there's only 20. All right, keep going.
Yeah, and we're at number 10.
Oh, right, you said 11. I forgot we were counting down. I apologize. Go.
Dark City.
That is about an experiment, thank you!
Great movie.
It's a great movie. It was The Matrix before The Matrix did it better and more action-y, but it's a great, great movie. And it has, I know I've been spoiling stuff left and right, but this one, a lot of people haven't seen, and it's not one of those films where it's like, it's inexcusable for you to have not seen this film. And it's like, there's plenty of people who just haven't seen Dark City, and you should, if only because it has, I think, one of my favorite montages in the history of film. Like, right at the end of the movie, Donaldson, Kiefer Sutherland narrates a montage, and it's like one of my favorite montages because it's such a beautiful payoff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has one of the best setups and payoffs I've ever seen, and I adore that movie. And fun fact, what do you call it? Darren Aronofsky ripped it off.
Did he?
Yeah, it ends with the Requiem for a Dream ends with the same shot that Dark City ends with, to it being Jennifer Connelly at the end of a pier.
Right. I have no time for Darren Aronofsky.
No,
so.
It's reasonable. I mean, the man ripped off Perfect Blue and won't admit it. So, you know, there you go. That just shows what a valuable person he is.
All right. Number 9.
Yeah.
Battle Royale.
Ah, see, that's an experiment. There you go. Yeah. I love Battle Royale. I adore that movie. It's so hard to watch.
I love it. I think it's wonderful.
It's so brutal. Oh, God. It's so tough to watch. So intense. But yeah, Battle Royale is just amazing. From, I think, yeah, beginning to end. Like, it's just such a great movie. Takashi Kitano is so good in that.
It was banned or deliberately excluded from distribution in several countries. I didn't know that.
Neither did I. That's amazing.
The film was never officially released in the U.S. or Canada for 11 years.
Wow. Whoa. We did not wait that long to see it.
Holy shit.
We were watching a fan sub, it turns out. Who knew?
Wow.
That's so cool. Yeah, but I mean, it's a tough movie. That's why they had to make, you know, a completely sanitized version of it in Hunger Games. Yeah.
Okay, number 8, The Truman Show.
Yes, there you go. You did it. You found the Jim Carrey movie that actually was about human experimentation. Because yeah, it's strange because it is as much because it within the world of the film, it is just a product to be sold. But at the same time, Christoph is doing it as an experiment in human nature, like to see how much a person can be controlled and guided and. Like, as a god/parent, can he craft Truman, like, into what he's supposed to be if he builds this entire world around him? And the answer is no, he can't. There is something integral to the human experience that Christoph hasn't accounted for. Mm-hmm. Oh, such a good movie. I love that movie so much. All right, go.
Number 6, Night and Fog.
I have not seen Night and Fog.
So. Well, this is cheating because it's a documentary.
Oh, yeah, that's not a movie. That's a documentary.
About the experiments the Nazis did. So.
Ooh.
Yeah. Gross and
like
upsetting.
Quite a downer, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll move on to Please. Number 5, Das Experiment.
Which one's that?
That's the German one about the Stanford prison experiment.
Prison experiment, right. I've never seen that one.
Oh, it's good. There's really? An American remake. Don't bother with it. No, the German one.
I did see the American remake. Yeah, and you're right to completely disregard that. Oh, the Stanford Prison Experiment, widely acknowledged now to be one of the worst things ever done, just because it had no experimental value.
No, I don't think that's true. But the problem is, they shut it down very soon after it started, but it should have been shut down much sooner.
Yes,
it was allowed to go on for too long. Well, no, even though it got shut down like
really fast,
within a matter of days.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's just I was listening to a podcast by a guy who just recently made a movie about it, who's just like just setting out all of the ways the guy just violated every principle of basic science to try and prove a point.
I don't think that's fair either, because like ethics and codes of standard and all that stuff, a little bit different back in 1971.
That's true. That is true. But in a sense that if you're trying to prove that people naturally fall into these roles, you don't, you know, constantly coach them to behave in specific ways.
I think he expected a certain result.
And he really tried to twist
not to the extent that he witnessed, I guess, that he saw.
Well, and that's definitely something we're going to talk about in a show more suited to that. So anyway, next up.
Number 4, Eyes Without a Face.
Oh, I've never seen Eyes Without a Face. I hear it's wonderful. Because that's the super classic, 1920s film? No, 1930s?
Mm-hmm. 1960.
Okay, I'm thinking of something completely... I am thinking about something totally different.
Yeah.
I apologize. What is Eyes Without a Face?
It's a French movie about a guy who does everything he can to attempt to fix his daughter's face after it is horrifically disfigured in an automobile accident that he caused.
Wow.
Yeah.
So now I know what that one episode of Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior was ripped off of. You know, the worst episode in the world?
I stopped watching.
I know.
I don't think did I even see a single episode of Suspect Behavior?
You might not have. It was the worst.
I don't think so.
But anyway, yeah, there was an episode that had that exact plot and was one of the worst things I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And now I know what it was ripped off of, this movie, because well, that's the exact plot of that.
Okay.
All right, go.
Number 3, La Jetée.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of about an experiment. I don't think it's a very good movie.
Well, definitely about an experiment.
But yeah, it's about an experiment, about whether they can get someone to go back in time to get the tech they need to make energy work in the future and blah, 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 blah. I don't think it's a very good movie. Like, it's not really watchable. I think 13 Monkeys is a much better movie, but
12 Monkeys.
12 Monkeys is a much better movie. I know. But, yeah, I do recognize that they are correct.
It's a movie about an experiment.
Yeah, totally.
Number 2, A Clockwork Orange.
See, yes. Okay. Yep. Boom. That's what I'm talking about. There is a great movie about an experiment. Ugh. Such a rough one to watch. I just watched that documentary about the guy who was Stanley Kubrick's assistant.
Uh-huh.
And Stanley Kubrick was a madman.
Yeah. I don't think that's
when you find out what a madman he was, when you hear it from this guy's, in this guy's words, you're like, wow, so much of A Clockwork Orange makes even more sense now. Mm-hmm. If you just hear this guy talking about what he thought and how he lived and how he worked. You're like, oh, okay, now I get A Clockwork Orange. Like, I thought I got it before, but now I really get it. So yeah, Clockwork Orange is amazing.
Yeah. Ready for number 1?
Always.
Can you guess what it is?
Well, we know it should be the Belko experiment, but no, that's all that's in my head. What is it?
Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. Although, I would debate whether that counts as human experimentation, because he's trying to create new life. And it's debatable that the Frankenstein he creates is not human.
Well, he stitched it together from human parts, so...
To create something new, though. Now, you are right. I'm splitting hairs to a ridiculous degree at this point. No, it absolutely... I'm shamed that my closed mind didn't see that that's obviously the best one. Mm-hmm. Of course it is. It is the definitive human experimentation movie. Up until the Belko experiment. which I still theorize is about a scientific experiment just as juked as the Stanford Prison Experiment was. But that's a debate we had another time and may talk again about in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, Frankenstein's great. I assume they mean, you know, 1930s Frankenstein. James Whale Frankenstein.
1931.
Ah, oh, such a great movie. It really is. It's one of those things. I think it's fair to say it holds up better than basically all of the other, like, early Universal horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, it's better than Dracula. It's better than The Wolfman. It's better. I mean, The Mummy's good, but it's better than The Mummy.
Yeah.
It's funny. I only recently found out that what happened with Dracula was that they were going to do... they were going to do, like, a full production of Dracula. And then there was, you know, one of those Hollywood moral panics. And they're like, we can't be in the horror movie business. You can only make Dracula if you can make it for $8. And that's why it's adapted from the stage play rather than from the book. And takes place in, like, three rooms.
Nice.
Yeah, so they just filmed the stage play because suddenly they had all of their location money just stolen out from under them by, yeah, moral panic about horror movies.
Love it's been going on forever, panic. People.
It's been going on forever. But yeah, that's not, like, there's a lot of movies on that list that aren't actually about human experimentation, mm-hmm. but that's still a pretty good list because they did hit the big ones.
Sure. Okay.
All right. Okay, you're less kind than I was, but that's
offer,
fine.
Honestly.
I know. All right, so yes, but of course, other than that, I assume they're still making movies about terrifying human experiments. Do you have one to offer us?
Not a human experimentation horror movie, but I have a Christmas horror movie to talk
Yay!
About.
Yay! It's almost Christmas, folks.
Because I guess, because once American Thanksgiving has passed us by, then it's the Christmas season.
We're
going to
start watching Christmas horror movies soon. And not one of them will be as bad as the worst movie we've ever seen, which we covered last year.
What was that?
Better Watch Out.
I don't remember. Oh, yeah. That was terrible.
Yeah. One of the worst things we've ever seen.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it's bad.
It's dire.
It's. I don't think it's one of the worst, but it is really bad.
Which it is of no worth, so I call it one of the worst.
Okay.
So I'm trying to be clever, and it didn't work. All right, what's the movie?
It's called Christmas Blood.
Ooh, I'm already
Christmas
interested.
Christmas is a time of peace, love, and family, but not for Norway. As a psychopath dressed in a Santa Claus suit has been terrorizing them for the past 13 years.
What?
Or as soon as the caroling starts, this demented Kris Kringle dispenses bloody axe blows, regardless of whether you've been bad or good. As the holiday approaches on one snow-covered town filled with revelers, a pair of detectives work against time to find and arrest this bearded serial killer. Will they manage to stop this demented Saint Nick before he kills again?
Definitely no.
Probably not.
No, because unless there's, like, only a bunch of killings in the prologue at the start of the movie,
and then there's no
death for the rest of the movie, and they just keep stopping him, I don't think that would be much of a movie.
So this comes out on December 4th.
Oh.
On DVD.
We're definitely covering this. Yeah, 100% we're going to cover that one.
Yeah.
So it is, like, it's not just set in Norway. It is a foreign film.
Yeah, this is a Norwegian film.
Oh, just making sure. Sometimes North American movies are, in fact, set in other countries.
No, it says right here, also known as Yule Blood, this is a Norwegian horror film.
Nice. All right, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great. All right. So as I previously announced, we are here to talk about some movies this week. We decided to get caught up on the Purge franchise, which after the Purge Anarchy, we just didn't bother with election year. But now that there's two of them, we thought, hey, theme show.
Might as well watch them.
Might as well get caught up, which we now did.
Which we did. Okay, so we're going to start with Purge Election Year. A presidential candidate wants to end the Purge. The NFFA, the party what started the Purge, wants to end her. So begins the Purge Election Year.
Okay, so...
I'm going to go on the record and say this is easily the best Purge movie.
It is. It's better than the first Purge. It's better than the rest of the Purges. Like, there's interesting stuff in the first Purge, but this is by far the better movie.
I did not like the first Purge. We'll get there. We'll I think there's there. Interesting stuff going on in this movie.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in this one.
The
Purge world.
The world, the universe in which the Purge is set, much better than any of the other films has.
Totally true.
It actually has interesting characters mm-hmm. and a story to tell.
Yeah, the rest of them have really suffered by not having a story to tell at all. Like, right? They really don't. They're just like, here, or Purge Night, here's some stuff that happens that night. Other than
survive the night. Like,
yeah, which, by the way, wasn't that the tagline?
I don't know. That's there's a movie called Survive the Night.
Yeah, I might be thinking of that, but no, I really feel like that was the tagline for one of the movies.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
But yeah, like, this film is really about something. And there's something right at the beginning about the premise that really bothers me. And I'll tell you what it is. Like, so they need to get Frank Grillo back, because honestly, this movie, like, only exists because they were able to get Frank Grillo back. Mm-hmm. That's true. They wanted to do the first Purge third, and then James DeMonaco said, hey, Frank Grillo, will you come back for another movie? And he's like, of course I will. I had a great time. And so they made this one instead. And so I understand you have to get him back. So he's gone from being a cop to being DC, like, he's transferred to the District of Columbia Police Department and is now private security, like dedicated security for a senator, right? Senator Charlie, I don't remember her last name.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, they just keep calling her Charlie the whole movie, so it's fine. Senator Charlie. And so she's the woman who's most against the Purge, right? And so the night before the Purge, it looks like she could win because, as we've learned in every Purge movie except for the first one, nobody really wants there to be a Purge. Like, almost no one is on board with the Purge. It is just something rich people do to keep the poor people in check. And as we learned in the previous film, the poor people don't do a great job of keeping themselves in check, so the rich people send mercenaries to just mass slaughter the poor people.
Yes.
And that's a really interesting thing. And what bothered me is, so he is working for the woman who is most against the Purge, right? Mm-hmm. And he, the character, has firsthand knowledge that the Purge is a frigging sham cooked up by rich people to oppress the poor. And yet, and he works for her, and that's not like the cornerstone of her argument against the Purge. That nobody wants it, that it's, you know, that it's not an organic thing, that the rich people are frigging hiring mercenaries to mass gun down poor people. Like, that should be kind of central to her argument, don't you think?
The thing, like, it's the truth, but yeah. I don't know. Like, you have to think about what's going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're worried that would sound too much like a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's going to sound. Yeah, it is. And even though that is the truth, and a lot of people understand that to be the truth, it's a harder sell than.
It's immoral.
Yeah.
Okay, I see your point.
And the morality thing, like, it's an issue for her character. Because it's the reason why she's become a politician and wants to get rid of the Purge. Because her family was murdered on Purge Night for no good reason.
Yeah, the first Purge Night.
So, like, the whole morality thing is, like, it gives her character motivation. It also gets in the way of her character.
Does it ever?
Actually being useful.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit of a problem for the movie, and it gets a little tiresome, but the movie kind of drops it after a while. If maybe it realizes that this is a problem.
Yeah. Like, at some level, I just want to be.
She's a shut up about it.
At some level, I just want to be, come on, just kill Kyle Secor. Come on. One thing I found really funny about the movie was they're like, she's gonna win the election, right? Like, the whole thing about the Purge election year is they were so worried she's gonna win the election that they have to change all of the rules of the Purge, like, so the big rule of the Purge, just so they can assassinate her, right? But what bothered me about that was, isn't the election 8 months away? Does she even have the nomination?
Elections are in November.
Exactly.
But no, but in the world of The Purge.
The Purge, apparently they have changed it to May for some reason.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe they've changed it to May just because they had locked themselves into the whole March 21st thing. Mm-hmm. Like, they had locked themselves in the first movie to it being every year on March 21st, but long before they ever conceived of this movie. So by the time they're making this movie, they're like, okay, well, let's just say they move the elections to May. It's fine. You know? Let's not worry about that. But it raises this question. If they move the elections to May, does that mean the new president gets in like, June or July? Like, or does the new president still not come in till the next year? Like, how does this work?
No, I think... if your election is in May,
probably
2 months later, yeah, your new president takes over. There's no point in having an election in May. And then
you have to wait till next year. Yeah, for the lame duck session.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just weird that they've entirely reorganized how American elections work because in the first Purge movie, they decided the Purge was in March.
Right. And like, whatever. I don't care.
It's fine. I thought it was funny. It's not a big deal. Yeah. I just thought that was a funny thing about the film. But yeah, there's so many interesting things going on in this movie. And they give such a good showcase to the veteran from the first film. Like, I really liked what his character had to say. Yeah. I liked his performance. I liked what his character, and his character makes some frigging great points. That it's like, yeah, once we get rid of the Purge, we can start being good people again. But when the other guys on the other side just get to kill us every year, we're not in a position where we get to be pacifists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really strong argument.
Yeah.
And try as she might, she can't really come up with an argument against that.
No.
And I think that's good, because it's like, you need people like her to change things, but we're now in a position where no change can happen until something big goes down. And I thought that this is the first Purge film to legit have a brain in its head.
Except there's one line of dialogue that I can't figure out.
What's that?
And so it's when the mercenaries attack her house.
Yeah.
And she's not Frank Grillo and she have escaped. And the mercenary says to her chief of staff or whoever it was who betrayed her.
It was the chief of staff. Yeah.
No money until we find her. And it's like, but they're paying you. Why would the lead mercenary?
No, but he's saying that, like, the founding fathers will not give the chief of staff and the head of security and the second in command of security their payoff until she's been nabbed.
It just the way he says it,
you're right. It's very weird.
It doesn't make sense for him to say that.
No, it does
Whereas
sound
the chief
very
of
strange.
Staff should have said it to him. You're not getting That's paid true. Until...
But I think in this situation, both the mercenary, played by that famous actor, who looks almost exactly like Anthony Michael Hall.
I don't think he looks like Anthony Michael Hall.
John Oliver did a bit about it where he literally put, like, pictures of the two of them next to each other. And it's like, tell me which one is which.
Oh, maybe I don't know what Anthony Michael Hall looks like.
Well, you don't know what he looks like these days.
I guess
ever
not.
Since he got super buff. You're picturing the
like
Breakfast
1990s
Club. Anthony He's been Michael super buff since the late zeroses. But yeah, it's funny. And it's only because this guy is... you know, very, very buff and tatted up that you didn't really notice the resemblance. But no, I think the concept there is that both he directly works for the New Founding Fathers Party, right? And the other guy...
I understand what you're saying, but
the film doesn't make it clear. You're right.
That line of dialogue, just cut it out. It doesn't belong.
Yeah, and it doesn't really add anything, because honestly, does it matter why her chief of staff betrayed her? Maybe he just believes in the Purge. Who knows? Like, it doesn't matter that he's expecting a payoff for it.
Well, I'm assuming everyone's going to get a payoff. Like, why else would you betray somebody?
Oh, no, but some people do it for ideological reasons. But
here's
something I liked about the movie, which is they pointedly refuse to say whether she's a Democrat or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, but they make the point of saying the NFFA is what the the Republican Party kind of turned into it.
Well, no, in the fourth film, they say it's a third party that took over. But by the way the NFFA operates, it's clear that this is what the Republicans turned into, but they imply it as far as they can without coming out and saying it, and they're just not willing to come out and say it, because that is a bold thing to put in your movie to announce, yeah, at some point the Republicans just started making their platform, we shoot black people. And that's kind of the premise of the entire film. It's like the mixture of religion and guns, which in this one goes to the point that Kyle Secor is playing literally a minister.
Like, yes.
A minister is running for president on the platform of violence as sacrament.
I know. And I loved that. I thought, like,
he's
this
so
is
so good.
He's Kyle Secor, so he's going to be great. But just the fact that the movie had the sense to go in that direction with the NFFA and just completely embrace the weird cultish religious aspect of their political ideology. Like, it's just, I'm like, yes, this is exactly where this franchise should go.
Oh, absolutely.
The development of its world. So,
And we're going to talk about that in The Purge. What do you call it? One of the failings of First Purge in a minute. We're going to talk about that. But I think one of the things that this film that suffers it is that three films in and James DeMonaco still can't shoot action to save his life. He's just not good at it.
No, he's not. I mean, the fight scene at the end there is okay.
With Frank Grillo and the mercenary. Yeah, no, their little knife fight they have, that's good. It's a good little fight scene. But all of the other action in the movie is just such garbage.
Yeah.
You can never tell what's happening in any of the fight scenes. The gun fights, the fight scenes, it's so badly shot, and it's just so frustrating.
We've seen a lot worse, so.
We have. But it's just like, you'd think he would have learned by now. It's been three movies. And it's so funny, because I'm watching the fourth movie, and there's some really well-shot action in that. And I'm like, oh, did he finally learn? Then I get to the end credits. Oh, no, somebody else directed it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that explains it. But yeah, I think it's the most interesting Purge movie. It's the best Purge movie. And by going all in on saying, yeah, this is the logical endpoint of Republican orthodoxy and the NRA, it's like, whether or not that's accurate or whether or not it's a fair thing to say, it is a bold statement for them to make. And they make it in a really aggressive fashion that I really respected.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a ridiculous liberal, and that's why I liked the politics of this movie. But at the same time, you know, I liked that the film was so nakedly political this time. You know, I mean, I respected its willingness to be nakedly political about this stuff and just say, yeah, this is what America is in a really ugh way.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I just point out the one last plot thing that really bothered me?
Sure.
I don't believe Frank Grillo is very good at his job.
You mean as a...
as a security. Like,
security?
He's great at killing people, okay? He's great at killing people. No one would say Frank Grillo isn't great at killing people. But as the head of security for someone, he leaves a lot to be desired. And I'll tell you why. The day before the Purge, they're like, by the way, now politicians can be killed in the Purge and it's not a crime. And at that point, they know that the sole reason that they would do that is to kill her specifically.
Yes.
Right? And that he also knows, more than anyone else in the film, that the new founding fathers hire kill teams to kill people on Purge night.
Yeah.
But he doesn't act like someone who knows there is definitely a team of assassins coming. Like, they're like, oh yeah, let's just hang out. And I know she's like, I just want to be at home. And he's just like, look, right now, there is a team of assassins coming to kill you. I know you don't want to hide in a bunker somewhere, but we have to find somewhere more secure than your Georgetown residence, which is surrounded by, like, narrow alleys that people can sneak, and rooftops higher than us that we can be sniped from, and alleys that we can be snuck up on from. Like, we need to find you a better place to hide out.
But
than
still,
this, even if you don't want a bunker.
Having said all that, he did secretly create an escape route out of that house.
That was so nice. That was nice.
I mean, say what you want. The man was prepared.
He has prepared. He did have some contingencies. I'm not going to say he didn't. But I'm just saying, like, you need a better
including
plan.
A bomb to just blow up the house.
I know! The bomb made me so happy. It's like, is that a... Yeah, he blew up the house. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Because he saw it coming, but at the same time, like, he did not express to her the level of threat she was dealing with.
Well, maybe he knew that there was no point. He'd be wasting his breath. Yeah,
it might be. Like, she might have been so dedicated to that.
Yeah, there's just no point in having that argument.
You're probably right. And one last weird thing I'll nitpick. One thing that really bothered me, though, was in the opening scene when her family gets murdered, was the terrible looping on the killer.
Yes, because he's wearing a mask, but his voice is too clear.
It's completely clear. And I'm sure what happened was they recorded it on the day and they thought it was unusable, but then they overcorrected in the other direction. And it's like clearly a guy in a sound booth. Like this is not audio that is being recorded in a real room by an actor wearing a mask. Like there's ways to clean that up. And they just didn't do any of them. And it really bothered me. Because it takes you out of that first scene that really needs to establish that this is what's happening. Like, imagine if in the first scene of The Dark Knight Rises, they pull the mask off and it's Tom Hardy as Bane. And it's just like, you hear Tom Hardy speaking clearly in a sound booth. Like, you'd be like, what? What's happening?
Yeah.
So yeah, it has that kind of take you out of the movie effect. Again, probably only for people like us who know how movies are made. But it was annoying.
Yeah.
I'm sure most people weren't bothered by it. All right. So now let's move on to our next movie of the evening. The far more uneven and problematic The Purge. The First Purge.
The First Purge. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the first time the social experiment, which came to be known as The Purge, took place, it happened on Staten Island. A psychologist predicted the disadvantage would turn on each other. Boy, was she wrong.
She was completely wrong.
Why would you even think that? You are a terrible psychologist.
She's the worst academic in the world. Like, she's clearly the worst academic in the world.
Like, this is my whole problem with The Purge to begin with. We're a social people. We live in society. Some of us are crazy and nurture a bloodlust. Most of us don't.
And more importantly, if someone murdered your family yesterday, you're going to be pissed about it tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole idea that you could do the purge and it's just contained, the actions you performed are contained to that one day is what the entire film is based on. And that flies in the face of everything everyone knows about human nature.
Well, it's just this idea. It's like you have all of this rage inside of you because life is unfair and you're at a disadvantage. So if you partake in violence, well, it's cleansing and it's cathartic and you'll be just fine afterwards. It's like, that is not how it works.
Nope. Well, no, I mean, they even point that out briefly. We didn't mention that one scene. I love how we loved The Purge election year and we didn't talk at all about Michael T. Williamson, who like is one of the main characters of the movie, who's a guy who's not given up his store for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And like the very human and humane, like the human performance and humane treatment of him by the film. And his, is it his niece or his cousin who works at we found out about the triage vans who go around helping people on purge.
Just a friend. They're not
just a friend from the neighborhood. Okay. Just a friend from the neighborhood. Right. And we didn't talk at all about them, but I just want to point out that that is how people respond to the purge. People don't respond by thinking what a great idea it is to murder people. They respond by saying, how can I help? And that's one of the things I loved about Purge election year is they have this whole, here is the culture that built up around the purge, people who have to do that. And you're right that it's so funny because who on earth would think that this social experiment would work?
Yeah.
Like, how could you think that? I'm not saying let's murder social scientists, but no one was sad when that social scientist got murdered.
Well, she just, I mean, like, you, she makes a point of saying she doesn't work for the government and she's not a politician. Yeah. She just dreamt up this social experiment, and it was exactly what the NFFA was looking needed. For.
Yeah.
And, but she makes, like, she makes the point over and over again that she's just purely interested in the science
of it. Yeah. Of and it. I'm like,
even though her hypothesis is completely flawed.
Not only flawed, but like insane. Does she want to live in a society where once a year, massive amounts of people get murdered?
Right.
Well, and the funny part is, like, right away, they actually point out, and this is one of the things about the movie that's very smart, because right at the start, they point out that no, like, it's not an honest scientific experiment, because they're specifically paying people to stay and offering them cash bonuses if they kill people.
Yeah. If they participate.
And it's like, they don't, and, oh, well, obviously, and this is, again, a smart thing in the script, the guys doing the actual recruitment, right, the intake, aren't allowed to say that we'll give you more money if you kill somebody, but they make it as clear as they possibly can without saying.
Yes.
Oh, no, it's almost explicitly said.
But here's
like,
the thing.
They come that close.
Here's the thing. So Please. The whole reason the Purge exists, and this is like, it's clearly stated in the film, the Purge exists because the government doesn't want to pay out welfare.
Yes.
That's it. That's the only reason it exists.
Yeah.
And yet, they're paying everyone, or they're willing to pay every single resident of Staten Island $5,000 just to stay home for the night, plus a bonus if they
kill anybody.
Kill anybody. So it's like, where is this money coming from?
Well, no, but I mean, in that sense.
Or is there an expectation that they'll just wipe each other out and there's
well,
no
yeah, they're not
going
to have to pay the people who die, I guess.
Sunrise.
They don't have to. Because I don't see them getting a lot of money up front.
But I just, if like, but the thing though is that they make no bones about the fact that America doesn't have any money and they don't want to spend it on the poor.
Yeah.
And yet they're off. It's a documented fact.
Well,
they're offering people $5,000.
You're totally right. And I don't know how many people live on Staten Island, but it's a lot.
But still.
So that's a good outlet. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a big outlay. It's not a gigantic amount, but it's a big outlay of cash. But I think they would argue that if you have to spend money to make money, in a sense, because if they don't spend this money to get the purge started, they won't be able to mass kill, because the second year, the full purge, they're not going to be paying people for that. They're just going to be killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is the initial outlay to get people. It's like you're spending money to grow the brand and then the brand starts making you money. Is the idea here.
But still, but then we come back to the idea that it's a dishonest experiment.
Oh,
it's biased.
Oh, no, and that's the whole point. Like, it is a dishonest experiment because they need the result.
Right. But, and then they're not getting the result that they wanted, which they seem to have anticipated anyway, because lo and behold, there are mercenaries on Staten Island.
Yeah, and they were ready to go.
Ready
like,
to go
that's the
at
thing.
A moment's notice. So it's like,
oh yeah, and that's one of the interesting things about the movie, I thought, which is that, yeah, whatever Aunt May believed, right, whatever Aunt May thought was going on, the guy, her government contact, is like, no, this is happening. Poor people are getting killed tonight. And if they don't do it because of your crappy social experiment, they're going to do it because I send in a bunch of KKK dudes.
Well, the other problem I have, though, again, going back to her being just a terrible fucking psychologist, is that so they incentivize everybody to stay on the island. Okay, great. And then they're all pissed off that nothing's happening.
Yeah, that people are just
and then they're
block
surprised
parties.
To find out that people are having block parties. And it's like, what? Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, no. And the thing is, what bothers me about it is, it's like, they're like, I thought that if I gave people permission to commit violence, they would do it and they would get it out of their system. And I'm like,
are you
an
idiot?
Fundamentally,
people don't need permission to commit violence.
People commit violence all the time.
All the goddamn
without
time.
Permission.
The fact that they're not going to get punished for it doesn't make a difference because it is very clear that punishment is not a deterrent.
No, punishment has never been a deterrent. But more importantly, I want to point out that, and this isn't addressed in the film, but I felt there should, I mean, if there wasn't a subtextual element of this, there should have been, which is, there have got to be some people in there who, like, don't believe they're actually not going to get punished. You know, like, there's got to be a few people who aren't purging like, just because really they think, we're black people. If I go and shoot somebody, you honestly think the cops are not going to come and get me tomorrow? Right. There must have been a whole bunch of people like that. You know, because it's like, it's the first time they're doing this. Why would you believe the government when the government does nothing but lie and do scummy stuff? Like, why would you believe they're not going to come and arrest you tomorrow? One thing I did like was the rationale of the drug kingpin, which is, yeah, you know, it's like, no, we have to stay because we can't we can't just leave our money and drugs unguarded. Like, well, maybe we take the money and drugs out too. Well, no, that would be illegal.
Yeah.
Like, if we try to take the money and drugs off of Staten Island, they'll just arrest us. It's only legal if we keep it on Staten Island.
This is the other thing why just the purge as a whole doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or it wouldn't work the way the world of the movie wants it to. If there were such a thing as a night where all crime were legal, including murder, believe me, there are worse things you can do.
Yep.
That I truly believe a lot of the crime there'd be a lot of property crime. There'd be a lot of theft.
Oh, God, yeah.
There'd be just a shitload of drugs and guns being moved around.
Oh, yeah, the whole country.
It wouldn't be really about the murder.
No, it wouldn't be about
all this other stuff going on.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, this film, I think what bothered me most about it is the other, like, the last two films, like Anarchy and then Election Year, they get close to saying that, like, this is all about capitalism. Like, they get close to admitting that this is all about capitalism.
Does make the point because there's such a thing as purge insurance.
Insurance! I know!
And it's like, insurance companies make a killing in the purge. And I'm like, how? I don't understand how that works.
Yeah. Well, no, but it's like, this is all about, I mean, I don't want to, you know, get too deep into
the structure you need to have in place to take care of the aftermath of the purge.
I know. Oh my God.
That's got to be outrageously expensive.
It absolutely does. But the thing is, this movie, right, the purge is about capitalism, okay? Capitalism has failed in the world of the purge. Like, there's mass unemployment, and America's still a big country. People still need to eat. People still need to drive cars. But so much wealth has been sucked away from the bottom, you know, 99%. The result is you need something to keep them from having a revolution. And what they came up with was government-sanctioned mass murder.
No,
but it's
what
like,
you're supposed to come up with is blood sport, not a purge.
Well, no, they do say that in the first purge.
Or a rollerball.
In the first purge, they do say that this is basically just gladiatorial combat. Right? And are we the Christians or the Lions? And you're right that this franchise would actually make more sense if instead of being a national, like, they would have an easier time making the points about capitalism that they clearly want to make if the purge was in fact one city a year. Like, every year, one city is randomly selected to be where the purge happens and everybody else gets to watch.
Yes.
That would make more sense. And you never knew when your city was going to be the purge city. That would be super interesting.
And like, that's why everybody should go in and watch Series 7.
Series 7, yeah, which is about that. Because it's just, it's weird how close this thing comes to saying this is about the failure of capitalism and how American capitalism reacts to the collapse of American capitalism. And the answer is by just making it legal to murder poor people.
Yeah.
You know, which isn't far off of how other, it's like, okay, well, they're going to come for us eventually. You know, again, let's just reference Bane here. They're going to come for us eventually. So what we're going to do first in the world of the purge is invent a religious justification for killing the poor people and hopefully getting them to kill each other. And I like that the film, the whole franchise, but it comes up a lot in Election Year, not Election Year. Well, it does in Election Year, but more in this film, that the film is smart enough to say, yeah, the poor people aren't down with killing each other. They're 100%.
Anybody's down with killing each other, to be perfectly honest.
No, nobody. I mean, there's a couple of psychos out there.
Yeah, and that's year. Fine. And the first, like the actual, like the Purge, the original Purge movie had this problem too. It's like, there's no reason why these neighbors would turn on each other.
No.
And the reason they give in the movie is stupid.
Oh, God.
You sold me a really expensive
that
security
system. Scene
I'm like, are you kidding me?
Where all of the neighbors show up and complain that their security systems were too expensive. So now they're going to kill Ethan Hawke?
Bullshit.
Oh, God. That was the dumbest scene in such a dumb movie.
Yeah.
But and that's the weird part. I honestly believe that the writer, James DeMonaco, didn't know what he had with the first Purge movie. And he didn't understand what the world he'd created was. And that's why Anarchy is such an amazing upgrade. Because in Anarchy, he really does figure out what the world is, but he doesn't make a good movie about it until election year.
And then we have the first Purge, which...
Yeah, which as we've said, it's like, it's a very messy movie. It really is.
It's
like,
also, it's very slow. Election year moves along at a pretty good clip. God, yeah. The first Purge stalls
out. There's this clock
out.
On election year. There's this really good clock on election year, right? And by the way, how pissed off were you in election year that the movie doesn't end? Like, you don't hear the Purge klaxon at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, why is it that he doesn't stab Anthony Michael Hall in the back of the neck? And then Anthony Michael Hall turns.
Fake
Anthony Michael Hall in the neck at the end of the Purge. Then he turns around, he raises the knife, the klaxon goes off, the guy falls to his knees and falls over dead. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the end of your movie.
Yeah.
How do you not know that? Oh, why do they not have the klaxon? But anyway. But this film, it's weird that I criticize it for not going all the way with the capitalism argument when this film is the most open about the racism of America of all of the movies.
No, it is. And that's great because that's where it was headed. We knew right from the start that's kind of what this whole movie was about.
Yeah.
Or this whole franchise was about. And now they had the courage to just come out and state it plainly for anyone who couldn't figure it out on their own.
I know. Literally, all of the white people are bad guys.
Yeah,
all
they
of
are.
Them.
All the white
all
people
of
are
them.
Bad guys.
And every other character in the film, good guy and bad guy, is a person of color. Like, all of them.
But then,
it's an
the
entirely
hero at
non-white
the end of the
main
movie
cast.
Is a drug dealer.
Yes. And, okay, I don't understand why that guy at the end of the movie didn't get his face slashed open.
Mm-hmm.
And grow up and then 20 years later he's Michael Kenneth Williams' character from Purge Anarchy.
Yeah,
like, wouldn't that, because the whole end of the movie he's become radicalized to fight the government and give up the drug trade, so it's like, doesn't he then become Michael Kenneth Williams?
Guess
just
not.
Logically. But it's like, that really puzzled me that character, because the whole movie, I'm like, is he going to turn out to be Michael Kenneth Williams? Is that why they're like not referring to him by his real name and only calling him King and stuff this time?
No, they call him Dominic.
They do call him Dominic eventually, but we don't know. I don't know if we knew. Oh, no, we did find out Michael Kenneth Williams' real name in the second film. Sorry. All right. In the third film, we found out his real name. It's just, I kept hoping we were going to find out that was the guy, because like the journey he goes through. Of losing everything and having the government shut down his entire way of life, but not because they hate drugs, but because they hate all people of his class,
mm-hmm.
right? That radicalizes him to be an anti-government fighter. And I thought, oh, well, obviously he grows up to be this other character, but then that doesn't happen, and it kind of disappointed me. And also, by the way, if the film wasn't clear about what it had to say about President Trump and right-wing America, a bunch of the villains are stormtroopers in blackface. Oh, and some KKK guys show up and shoot up a black church.
Yeah. And then you've got that weird Nazi dude in the leather coat.
The guy running the guys in blackface is wearing a Nazi uniform.
Yeah.
This film is very explicit about its politics in a way that the other films had only implied.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's like, if ever you wanted to know to the extent to which the new founding fathers are just what the Republicans have branded themselves as in a way that, right, they full on say in the movie, which is actually kind of a funny thing, that the new founding fathers got traction when the NRA put their support behind them.
Yeah.
And seriously, unintentionally, the funniest line in the movie is, the NRA funded them. And I'm like, the NRA is friggin' broke. The NRA doesn't have a dime. Like, in the last election, they spent so much money that the only reason the NRA didn't collapse, and this is true, is because a bunch of Russian billionaires propped up the NRA.
Really?
Yes.
Well, Russian billionaires in the ass.
Gave the NRA $30 million. Because their political actions had bankrupted the organization.
Wow.
That's a true fact about the last election.
Holy shit, that's terrifying.
Yeah, Russia propped up the NRA so they could keep making pro-Trump arguments.
Right.
So, that's a fun fact, because the NRA used to literally be a gun ownership and safety organization, and then a bunch of Psycho Turner Diaries people took it over in the 70s and are like, now it's going to be about fantasizing about Red Dawn.
Arming right yourself for the race war.
Yeah, arming yourself for the race war. It's 100% true. That's what they're for now. Yeah, and that's what The Purge is about too. And it's like, I know, while it's hilarious, the idea of the NRA funding anything, but The Purge's association of the NRA with what's going on is good, because the weird part is the NRA gets name checked in both of the last two Purge movies.
Yeah.
She points out that it's like, it's all just an excuse for the NRA to increase gun sales. And in this one, they flat out say, yeah, the NRA created a new political party so more guns would get sold. So yeah, they know where their politics are in this movie. And yeah. I kind of love that. But you're right that this one is messier. It doesn't have the tight focus. The characters are very disparate. And it takes us so long to get on board with Dominic as a character. Like, there are these two people who could be our lead. There's Dominic and then, well, I mean, the brother, I guess, is kind of a sub-lead too. Mm-hmm. But the activist lady and then the drug dealer are our two possible leads. And we end up spending a lot more time with Dominic.
Yeah. Right?
But you didn't get us on board with Dominic early enough for that to be a smooth transition.
No, and the only reason we are on board with him, to the extent that we can be, is because he's been double-crossed.
Yes.
And well, that's
and it's
it.
Interesting.
That's
because
it.
He 100% did not hire her brother to be a corner boy. He didn't.
Yeah.
And that is clear. And he's kind of pissed off that's because of his former relationship with this lady, he's pissed off that one of his guys did hire the brother.
Yes.
Right? So, like, we know he's not a terrible guy, but at the same time, he's still a scumbag drug dealer.
Yeah, and, if he were at least, using his ill-gotten gains to improve the neighborhood and improve the lives of the people in the neighborhood,
yeah,
then maybe, he could be a bit of an anti-hero.
Yes.
But it's like, he had a relationship with this woman and he still clearly really cares for her and cares about her family. But at the same time, that's
the only thing we get to be like.
That's all we get.
Then again,
it's like, oh, and now he's been double-crossed. Okay, I guess now I got to be on his side in all of this.
Yeah. And the thing is, right, the double cross is a good scene. Like, it's a good scene, and it's entertaining, and it does serve the purpose of getting you on side, but man, it should have happened a little earlier in the movie, guys, if you wanted to keep us involved.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's, that. You're absolutely right, that the stakes are established in the Purge election year so fast.
Yeah.
Like, we get the political thing, right? We get the introduction to the political climate, and then immediately there's Raymond Barry as the most scumbag man in the world. Like, how are we going to kill this cunt?
Yeah.
Like, that's basically his first line of dialogue. You're like, okay, I understand the stakes, but it's like, this man is Republicanism.
He's the C word. I felt like that's just a little over. No, not you. I mean,
the movie. No, not me. Okay. He does over and over again.
I know. It's like, I get it.
I get it. We're supposed to hate Raymond J. Barry. I get it. I already did. I watched, Justified. It's fine. Okay. He's the worst. But yeah, it's interesting because, like, right away, you get it. He is a supervillain. We know what we know. We already like, right? We already like her because we saw her family get killed. Mm-hmm. Like, they so clearly establish everything in the first 5 minutes of that movie. Her family gets tortured to death. You know, Raymond J. Barry is like the worst guy in the world. And then you turn it around and, oh, who's working for her? Oh, the guy we already liked. So boom, yeah. 7 minutes into that movie, you are 100% on board. Whereas the first Purge, we spend half the movie struggling to, you know, sign on with the plot of the film. Yeah. And that's just not acceptable.
Yeah. And again, yeah, like, I think partly because maybe the characters aren't well introduced at the start of the movie, but then also because just and maybe this is a me problem, I have such a hard time buying into the social experiment to begin with.
Yeah. Well, the weird part is, right, I think you would have had less of a thing if, right at this, like, less of an issue with it. I could be
and
wrong.
And this is the fourth movie in the franchise, I know. Still not buying into the premise, so.
I know. But the thing is, weirdly, I think you might have been more on board, and tell me if I'm wrong here, I think you might have been more on board if the guy who's the government person working on the Purge had opened the movie, like, having him talking to Raymond J. Barry about how this isn't really a social experiment, it's an advertisement for the Purge. And Raymond J. Barry and he's like, well, the scientist thinks, and he's like, I don't care what she says. There has to be blood.
She's just here to make us look good. Yeah.
She's just here to make us look
good. Or to sell
it. If you had a scene, yeah. Exactly, to be our marketing thing, right? This is our ad. And if you had Raymond J. Barry come back and lay that all out to this guy for the first 2 minutes of the movie, then boom, you've got the stakes. Mm-hmm. Right from jump, from the first second of the Purge, it was never about what they said it was about. Right? It was never true. And it's like, there are useful idiots like Kyle Secor who really believes in the religion stuff, but fundamentally, this is about the powerful trying to stay powerful by keeping the not powerful weak. Like, there are way more of them than they are of us, but we use everything in our arsenal to keep them weak.
Which movie are you talking about now?
The new one.
Then why are you talking about Kyle Secor?
No, what I'm saying is, okay, sorry, I shouldn't have made that clear. Within the ranks of the new founding fathers, there are true believers like Kyle Secor who actually are religious nuts and who would be fine with getting the shot in the head if that's how Purge Night shook out, because he believes in it. And then there are monsters like Raymond J. Barry who understand that it is just a way for the powerful to stay powerful. Right? Those are the two factions in the new founding fathers. And obviously the ones who were just there for political expediency were the ones who were always running things, because that's why politicians were immune to the Purge.
Yeah, so the first Purge needs that.
So in the
that.
First Purge, that's what I'm saying. I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear.
No,
I shouldn't have brought in Kyle Secor at all.
No.
Right? But yeah, that's what the first Purge needs. If in the first 2 minutes of that movie is a scene where Raymond J. Barry lays down the law to the guy who's there beside Marissa Tomei for the whole picture, then you've got a film where the stakes are clear. But this film doesn't even reveal that it's all a sham until, what, minute 55? Minute 60? Like, it's way too long. And you're right, that's the key of why Election Year works so much better, right, than First Purge, is the stakes are there in the first 7 minutes. And this film, you don't know what the hell the stakes are for two-thirds of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. I was wondering why it bothered me so much.
There you go.
You're totally right. It's an issue of how cleanly they set up Election Year versus how messy the first Purge is. And
I think
you needed Raymond J. Barry right at the start.
I think first Purge maybe takes for granted that you understand this world.
Yeah.
Or it's like, but that maybe you do, but you still need to set up your story, introduce your characters, and establish the stakes.
100%. You can't get as lazy as the first Purge does. All right. So I think that's our statement about the Purge movies. You know what I'm going to do now? And I'm not asking you to do this with me.
I am not watching the TV show.
That's what I'm saying. I am going to go watch the TV show and I'm going to report on it for you. Okay.
Thank you.
There's one thing I was not going to watch it. I had no interest in watching it, but I read one thing about the movie because someone was talking like, I read an article about a set visit, right? And the set the person was visiting was, was like an office building full of like a floor full of people working in an office building on Purge Night. And I'm like, oh my God, are they going to address it on Purge Night? Massive corporate frauds happen? Like, is this going to be, and I don't know if it does, okay? But just hearing that there was a whole huge section of the show set in an office building on Purge Night where people are actually working and are not killing each other. I mean, I'm sure they will by the end, but are not just there killing each other. It really makes me feel like the only thing they can be doing is like, this is a scene where they strip out all of the pension funds from 100 different companies, completely ruining all of these retirees.
Well, that's what
so eight people
about.
Can have $1 billion and then it's all legal.
That's the kind
because
of shit
they did it on
that
Purge
would
Night.
Actually happen on Purge Night. Not running around murdering people for no reason.
I know.
Reason.
And
you're
going to
set a fire
that.
To collect insurance.
I know.
You're going to rob a bank. You're going to rob a pawn shop.
And if they acknowledge that
and
in the Purge TV show,
commit a lot of white collar crime. Like that's
it's going to be mostly white collar crime.
Yeah,
it's going to be mostly stock frauds. It's going to be mostly like people empty, like using their computer to empty out everybody's savings account into their own account, and then be like, "Ah, I did it on Purge Night. I'm a billionaire now, and you're all broke." And of course, that would only destabilize society further. Meaning there's more justification for mercenaries to go out and murder poor people next year. So yeah, like there's such a smart idea in this franchise's potential to attack capitalism.
But it wants to be about murder.
It wants to be about murder. Well, you know what? That's why I'm going to watch the show. Also, I found out Lee Tergesen is on it and he's one of my favorite actors. So there you go. Mm. If you don't know who Lee Tergesen is, he's the main character Beecher from Oz. And he was Chet on Weird Science, the TV show. He's an amazing actor. He's one of my favorite performers. And I found out he plays the bad guy on the show. So yay.
Okay, great.
Yeah, just love that actor. All right. So that was the Purge series. We had a lot of thoughts about it.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for joining us for that. Do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
No, just again, True North Crime and Chicks and Dicks on an alternating schedule. So we just did Satanic Panic. That's a new True North Crime that's coming out. So,
oh, I can't wait to hear that.
Love Satanic Panics as much as I do.
Yeah, I do. I really do. And I'm sure a lot of people, other people do too. So get ready for that episode.
Yep.
All right. So yeah. And of course, constant new content over at, Vargelon.com and the, Hoguru channel. Also, the Criminal Minds podcast should be starting soon. It would have started by now, but we had a slight issue with hosting. but now that that's been resolved, it will be starting in the next little bit. So
yay!
I know. I'm pretty excited. All right. So I think that's that. Is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the AVODs blog at theAVOD.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us what you would do on Purge Night that doesn't involve murder. You can send us an email at theAVOD@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
I would publish so many Superman comic books.
You could do that any night.
No, but there's no copyright law on Purge Night.
Yeah.
I would publish them. That's the point. The publication date would be Purge Night, so they couldn't come after me for copyright violations as long as the comic book was out there. See?
Oh, my God.
Purging it up. All right. As always, I want to thank you for watching. And until next time, have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.